is my friend, my friend. The more I reject it, the more that it kicks in. Just enough to keep me on my toes. I say, come on, time. I've beat you before. Come on, time. What have you got for me this time? I'll take your words of wisdom and I'll try to make them right. Hey, it's just me and you again. Come on, time. Time, you're not fooling me. You're something I can't kill. You're flying like a mighty wind. You're never standing still. Time, as you pass me by, why did you leave these lines on my face? You sure have put me in my place. Come on, time. Come on, time. It looks like you're winning the race. Time, you're not fooling me. You're something I can't kill. You're flying like a mighty wind. You're never standing still. Time, as you pass me by, why did you leave these lines on my face? You sure have put me in my place. Come on, time. Come on, time. It looks like you were winning the race. Come on, time. Come on, time. Looks like you're winning the race.
That is brand new music from 85-year-old Willie Nelson. His latest album is called Ride Me Back Home. It's about how I feel this week. Welcome back. It's episode 24 of the Melnick and Murphy podcast from CNS Studios in NDG.
Side West.
I forgot to say Western NDG. I threw you off there.
Southwestern.
Yeah.
It's okay.
How you doing, Shane Murphy?
I'm good. I'm tired, but I'm good.
Hey, everybody's tired.
Yeah.
Why is everybody so tired? Wow, that was a party.
Oh, boy.
That was a party Friday at La Fairmont.
Yeah, Théâtre Fairmont.
Fairmont Theater, the old original Club Soda. And, yeah, there are a bunch of people dragging their asses, led by me, and you're probably right behind me,
only because
of the age difference. And, you know, I always, not only is this podcast brought to you by Lauren Rubin at Paramount Financial Services, 514-905-0885, Lauren will take good care of your money, 514-905-0885, and we mentioned quite a bit that Lauren's a great guy, right? He's a mensch.
Yeah, super cool.
And
over the course of the last 4 or 5 months, I've gotten to know him even better.
So he decided to throw me a 60th birthday party, Lauren Rubin did. And I honestly, when I walked in last Friday, I was kind of taken aback in a good way. I thought that Shane and some of his friends, especially from this neighborhood, would sit around, play all night, and we'd have some drinks, and a bunch of friends would be there.
Yeah.
And with the help of Oliver and the gang at the Fairmont Theater, it would be a fun night. I had no clue.
You thought that was going to happen.
Yes.
But you were mistaken.
Yeah, it was a major production, as it turned out.
It wasn't quite. It wasn't quite Billy Bob
esque.
Wasn't. On the level of Southern Soul or a Last Waltz, just because we knew it was a party, so that took a bunch of the pressure off, actually. But we still wanted it to be good. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we didn't want to fuck it up, but you know, as soon as we had the the bands together, and then we're the intros, and then, and yeah,
it was a very cool night.
Yeah,
very,
very time?
Cool night. Oh my goodness, I haven't stopped. But that was actually my youngest daughter, Phoenix. She texted me.
People got drunk at your party, Mitch. People were drunk.
There was a lot of alcohol, a lot of weed, maybe a little bit of hash, like old school, right? But yeah, there were
Shamady nights, baby.
It was fun to look in everybody's eyes and see how good they were feeling.
There was a lot of love in the room for you, man. You're well loved.
I appreciate it. I really, really appreciate it. But so, Lauren,
Knuckles had me choked up.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're jumping ahead. So you're about to say your daughter texted you, and
she said it was like, the next day when she arrived back home in Toronto, she said, "I feel like last night was a dream," and she spoke at the end of the night too, which was very touching. There's a lot of stuff, honestly, that I'm. People are sending me photos, and I don't remember taking them. People are sending me video that I don't remember existed. people are saying, "You said this. Do you know you said this about your dad on stage?" I don't remember saying anything. I don't remember a lot of it. All I remember is that I had a really good time.
You kept it together, I have to say, because there was after party and aftershock and after parties.
Aftershock.
Somebody said it was a good idea to go to Hurley's after.
Well, I felt compelled because Aaron Ward,
yep,
a longtime NHL defenseman, who Hurley's is sponsoring his appearances on my show, and you know, he doesn't work for TSN. He doesn't work television anymore. He's in the analytics business right now. I don't want to get too deep into it, but there was a well publicized incident that unfortunately cast a shadow that shouldn't have been there about him. But it was gambling related more than anything else. It was a gambling issue that he had, and he discussed it on the Bell Let's Talk Day.
Right.
Last year on my show, and opened up for the first time about what really happened and why he lost his job. But I always felt that he was very good on the air, and he was smart, and he played the game, and he knows a lot of people, and he was fun. He liked
to have
a good time.
Yeah, I find him hilarious. I love listening to him.
Tells great stories. Yeah. And I said, listen, I don't care how anybody else feels about you. I think you could help the show. And he appreciates that nobody else in the country really was sticking their neck out for him, and he promised he'd be coming up. I thought he might come up for the Grand Prix, but I'm glad he certainly waited a weekend to come up for this, and he just took in Montreal and got smacked around by it.
did you
had to go to Hurley's, right? So I said I'd meet up with him at Hurley's after the party.
Did you guys go anywhere the next day?
I met him for a couple of smoked meat sandwiches at Schwartz's.
Okay.
And then we went across the street to one of the bars that has three levels, and they were showing the Canadian Women's World Cup soccer team beat New Zealand.
Like champs or?
No, it wasn't champs.
Copacabana or something?
Yeah, I don't know what it was.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's how we ended up at Hurley's, because I did want to hang out in Hurley's with Aaron for a little bit, but I hadn't eaten. The food, apparently the food was tremendous. Vago and Morella's.
Oh, very, very good.
And very good. So I said, let's go to Chinatown. And Maison VIP was closed.
Yep.
They just closed the door. You guys went up to the main.
Yeah.
And we were going to meet you
Tupper
there. And you said, don't bother.
Yeah.
They were closed. So we ended up at the...
We were on a quest. It was like Lord of the Rings, me and Tupper, trudging up St. Laurent because the stupid street sale. We need to walk. And then we were like, okay, well, at least we can go to Bonkeys. And that was good.
That's where we ended up. Yeah. And I got to bed about 8 o'clock Saturday morning. And
really?
Then, and then got up at 11:30 to meet my brother.
You went
brother.
To bed at 8?
Yeah, 8 o'clock. Well, we were
wound up.
We didn't get home until 6:30, right? It was about 6:30 by the time I walked in.
Are you like one of those guys you have to unwind before you go to bed?
Yeah.
Okay.
A little bit.
I was like in the house, right into the sheets. Boom. Done.
Yeah.
Pierre Maguire showed up to your party?
Yes, he did. That was a nice surprise. Bob Gainey was there. Frank Marino. Did you see Frank?
Frank Marino, yeah. Yeah, that makes me nervous. I turned around and I was like, you know, I was feeling relaxed. The sound check was done. Everything was good. I hadn't gone on yet. And then I turned and I was like, oh, that looks just like Frank Marino. I hope that's not Frank Marino. And it was. And we chatted. And he had a bit of a cold, so he's feeling under the weather. And he's like, I probably won't be able to stay till you're set. And I was like, oh, that's too bad. But on the inside, I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Why? You're intimidated playing in front of Frank Marino?
I don't know. Would you be intimidated broadcasting in front of Walter Cronkite?
No, he would probably make me. He would probably raise the bar to for me to be the best.
Here we go with
can.
Your Mr. Positive
no.
beat. No, it's
no. I'm serious about that. I have shared shows and microphones with some of the best broadcasters in two countries, and I feel that we push each other to be better that way.
It's like me and you here.
Yeah,
I push you to be. I push you to be better with the podcast.
No, I understand that you're playing in front of Marino can be a little intimidating, but I don't think you're giving yourself enough credit to know that you could. Play your ass off.
Well, I mean, I'm comfortable with the way I play, but I mean, it's still, you know, still Frank Marino. So,
and
it was a little unsettling.
Yeah. When I saw him, it was because I haven't seen him for a bit. And I said, Frank, you going to play? He goes, no. I said, Frank, the next time I see you, you have to be playing. I mean, this is like ridiculous how many years you've gone without playing. He says, when the DVD comes out.
Oh, there
that
you
he's
go.
Been working on restoring for years,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So. Hopefully we can have a Billy Bob Productions reintroduction of Frank Marino.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
And on this podcast, right? Isn't he?
Yeah, I spoke to him. He's down. Okay. He's down. Just to pick the time, and maybe when the DVD comes out, we'll do that. Tie it all together.
So Lorne decided to throw this party, and he obviously needed your help. And I just want to thank him. I thanked him on the radio show, and again, I want to thank him here.
Yeah, he's all nervous. He's like, well, what are we going to do? And it's like, I was like...
Is he neurotic?
Not that he's neurotic, but I guess what I take for granted, you know, I grew up, you know, from talent shows, which is pretty much what it is, right?
Right.
Over the years, you play, but it's like you plug stuff in, you get up and you play, and it's not a big deal. But I try to put myself in his shoes saying, well, you know, he doesn't know really anything about bands and sound check, and it's really not that complicated. I was like, ah, he's going to be fine. It's fine. And I said, just tell me, you know, who we're going to get and how it's going to work, and I'll handle the bands. And then he did everything else. So
you couldn't get Bob Dylan?
I tried.
Yeah.
But he was at a yoga retreat. Mm-hmm. And he had bone spurs and some bursitis in his left shoulder, so he didn't feel like traveling. Yeah.
There will be, maybe by the time this is posted, there'll be a photo album, and there will be video. I know James Correa was shooting the whole night, and there'll be some video of Shane and his special guests, Selena Wolf. Rob Lutz did a beautiful cover of
Mutineer
by Warren Zevon. Jonas.
Yeah, did Hello. Good Morning, Little Schoolgirl. Which is a Muddy Waters song superimposed over the music of Who Knows by Jimi Hendrix Band of Gypsies. We turned that into a blues.
So cool.
I had my buddy Jason Kent playing with me.
That's from
Sunfields, yeah.
Yeah,
he plays Sunfields.
That group.
He plays with plays with the Barr Brothers, plays with Les Vulgaires Machines. I don't know if I'm saying that right. A bunch of people. He's a multi-instrumentalist. And we've known each other for about 20 years. I've seen him, you know, missing. He's playing, I'm playing, you never get to see each other. And I caught him at Brutopia, and he was doing a bunch of old surf songs and instrumentals and Beatles songs and a bunch of stuff that I don't do. And I was like, oh, it'd be fun to jam with that guy. So I invited him to Honey's about a month ago. I said, do you want to just come in and, you know, just hang out and see what happens? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, oh, this guy's cool, you know. Mile ender, you know, yoga, vegetarian. But I put that all to the side.
You're very well behaved here so far without any Jack.
What do you mean? I'm always well behaved. What are you talking about? Tony, is there any booze? I forgot. Now you gave me the thirst. I was good last night, man. I went to the gym. I was feeling good. The endorphins hit my brain.
Oh, yeah.
It was like the sun was setting. It was the perfect temperature. And I was like, I want to go out and get a little loose.
So our friend Howard Billerman of Hotel Tutango recording studio fame in Mile End, we were trying to arrange... a viewing party of the Scorsese documentary on Dylan, Rolling Thunder.
Right.
And
he tricked you.
He did. Yeah. He threw out a night, and I said, well, it can't be that night. And the next night, because the next night there's a party. And he texted me and said, yeah, I'm really sorry I can't make that party.
Howard Slick, man.
So you want to explain what he did?
You want me to explain it?
Yeah.
So he had the Hotel to Tango All-Stars, Michael Bryan, the whole crew.
And Campbell Woods, by the way.
Yes.
Very incredible talent.
Very cool. They went and they bought a bunch of Beetlejuice masks. And they cut just the top off so that they would have sort of a... How would you say that?
Well, it's okay. You're not offending me by saying it.
Receding hairline with like little tufts of hair. And they all came out in these sort of half... Larry David-esque skull caps, and they called themselves the Melnicks. It was Howard Melnick.
Oh, my goodness. It took me a split second to realize it was Howard and his group, and they just ripped through some great classic covers. Stones,
Dylan, some Petty.
CCR, and everything. Yeah, they were great. And Anakin. Yeah. Anakin covered Rage
Lean
Against
and
the Machine.
Mean, just a four-piece.
Yeah. A lot of talent in the room, And then Tommy Youngstein, you brought Alan Snoddy in.
Yeah,
thank you for that.
A lot of green M&Ms. It was a pain, you know, because his rider's always, scotch and white towels and white socks, and I don't know what he does with the socks, but whatever. Yeah, and it was fun. My man Andrew Tupper came in, and he's been busy raising a daughter in St. Catharines, Ontario, but he brought his six string and he played with Youngstein and got off the bench. So
yeah, no, yeah. It was fantastic. I know there were a lot of people in that room who are obviously big music fans, and it was hard to even move away during the live music just to go to the bar and get a drink because they felt they were missing something.
Yeah.
And I know Gallo also said he felt a little distracted. He wished he could go back and just pay attention for the whole night. So, well, it's a party, man. That's can't stay in the same place.
No,
it was great. Thank you so much.
Take it, for that. My pleasure
for doing that.
But that was three. That's like one group text. I just texted Anakin, Howard, and Alan, and I was like, "This is what's going down." And they were all like, "Yes." So it was mostly Lorne, but
and their videos put together. There's some people who couldn't make it.
Yeah,
And one of the messages was from Knuckles, who had knee replacement surgery, and he had subsequently a staph infection. I went to visit him like 3 days prior to that, and so I understood that he wasn't going to be able to make it. And as soon as his message was played in the room, he, with crutches, appeared.
I was sitting in the dressing room, and his knee was like
swollen.
Oh yeah, he's in a lot of pain, but he's very fond of you. So
it was a great time. So
you had a good time, man.
Thank you for that. I've said repeatedly since then, I felt better in my 50s than I did in my 40s. That's the God's honest truth.
Right.
This week has been rough. This is the only time I really have felt my age.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of, illegal smiles going on. It was a hell of a night.
Yeah. So thank you to Lorne Rubin again. And Shane Murphy and Oliver and the gang at the Fairmont Theater and all of the sponsors and all of the people who helped out. And it was a really, really great night. And my family was there, and I was quite moved by it, quite touched. It was not anything like what I expected.
No.
And that's the best birthday anybody could
Did you choke up at any
for.
Point? Did you get teary-eyed?
When Chris was speaking a little bit. And when my daughter was speaking at the end, and I was thinking about my late sister and my dad, but it was just cool. There was just a certain vibe in the room. It's kind of like a Billy Bob Productions feel, right?
Yeah.
Well, Len Yell was running around doing everything, right?
Len and Ken.
So anyway.
Anyways.
Thank you for that. So we'll have to do something on 65. Lauren, we love you for it, not only for sponsoring the podcast, for putting this together with help from Shane and so many other people. It was really cool. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. So we finished our last podcast number 23, with Patrick Creef,
Yes.
Who's just launched his new album, which is tremendous. We did the live launch at O Petrovis a couple weeks ago. There's another dude who just, he's just so talented. He sings, he's killer on guitar, he plays all the instruments, he writes his stuff, multi-talented. And I had never seen him play live before, so I was very impressed.
No,
other than the Last Waltz cameo. Right.
When there was the guitar army.
Yeah.
There were seven of us on stage. So,
Rob McDonald, you, Patrick Creef.
Corey Diabo. Graham Playford was on stage at that point. Anyways,
it was
about five too many guitars.
Yeah, but it sounded great. Look cool.
That's, yeah, it looks cool.
And so I was blown away by him, and I hope that Montrealers. What I told Patrick, the new album is Dovetail. That the next time somebody does a piece on Patrick Creef, the fact that he spent 10 years writing songs and playing guitar in the Deers would be much lower in the story.
Right.
Because he's on his own. He's tremendous.
Sure.
And deserves the next time a bigger room and a lot of people. So Dovetail is the name of that album. But we had closed with some Dr. John because I had just come back from New Orleans.
Good doctors passed on.
And since then, Dr. John passed away. We kind of knew something was up when he didn't play the 50th anniversary in his own backyard, and he did pass away. The family announced it. And here's a little sample that I asked Shane to select, a Dr. John tune, and we'll come back and talk about him after this. So good. What a classic cover.
Funky.
Mac Rebenack, Dr.
Nasty.
John.
Nasty.
A lot of people obviously know him from The Last Waltz when he performed Such a Night, but there is so
much.
Shout out
to dedicate this London Festival to everyone in the band. Yeah, my best friend, man. Somebody don't do it, somebody else will.
It's always like a train that's about to go off the track. You're like, ah, come on, is it going to?
My best friend, Jim. Used to try and get away from him.
But a lot of the, like the character, the Night Tripper from the early 70s and all the gumbo stuff and the what he wore and how he wore it and his persona, don't let that overshadow what a brilliant musician he was. As you can hear the boogie-woogie piano.
Oh, like, my God.
It's just so talented.
Master.
Wrote songs. He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for a reason. It's not because of what he wore.
Yeah.
And he's a great, great musician, Mac Rebennack. Go and discover his stuff. Above and beyond.
Funny side note. Started playing piano because he got his left finger, a finger on his left hand almost shut off.
Yeah, he ran around with the wrong crowd early on, right?
Well, that's
like a lot of people in New Orleans.
That depends what you mean by wrong crowd. Some would say the fun crowd.
Okay, but...
You know?
Yeah, he ended up behind bars, though, I think. Did he not? Briefly?
Not wrongfully imprisoned, Mitch.
Yeah, okay. It's not like Hurricane Carter.
No.
What a life. Different. There was a double bill at the Jazz Fest a few years ago. I don't know if it was 5 years ago, 4 years ago, six, whatever it was. It was Dr. John and Leon Russell. And now they're both gone.
Who do you like better?
Dr. John.
Me too.
Yeah. Full respect to Leon Russell, who also wrote some gorgeous songs.
100%.
And a big influence on Elton John. But Dr. John is just more my kind of... Well, you know, you love that music, the
more
New Orleans
more
funk.
Greasy. Not yeah. Greasy, greasy. Yeah.
And nobody sounds like Dr. John. You could tell the first phrase out of his mouth, it's him.
Yeah. He's like he's singing, but he doesn't really care that he's singing. He just seems super relaxed.
Much because he was.
Yeah, very relaxed. A New Orleans piano master, I mean... In the tradition of James Booker and Professor Longhair,
yeah, straight and, line,
yeah. And if you go, I mean, he was around when that style evolved. And if you go on YouTube, there's a couple of he put out a tutorial, and you can just go watch, and it's amazing. He does Tipitina. It's just him and the piano.
Yeah.
And it's just...
I have those albums. It's just him solo at a piano from the 70s.
Right.
There's like volumes of them. It's just... Yeah. There was a period in my life when I was listening to a lot of... I was listening to Monk.
Right.
And Oscar Peterson. Because it was not a natural instrument for me to...
Gravitate towards?
Yeah. And I said, listen, if I... You know, I haven't tried... I have got to listen to these people. And then I got it.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you watch the YouTube stuff, he's just, it's like shooting fish in a barrel, like so relaxed and just great. He's like, well, you know, Fats Domino would play it like this, and James Booker would play it like this, and if you think Professor Longhair, he did this. It really, really crazy. Great stuff.
Did you see Tremé, the show Tremé?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Well, he's in a couple of the episodes, obviously. And ironically, Dookie Chase, with Lloyd Fischler, who had been to New Orleans once before, we went for the 50th anniversary of the Jazz Fest, said, we're gonna go to this famous, famous joint, Dookie Chase's. And on the wall, there's Obama, and everybody has eaten there. They're famous for their fried chicken. You got to take your hat off when you sit down and eat. It's very Southern hospitality, right. Old school charm. And I forget what her name was, Sylvia Chase. She just passed away just a couple of days before Dr. John did. Another institution in New Orleans for this the fried chicken, like.
And you had it?
Oh, yeah.
It's good.
It was It's. Yeah.
What a great name. I wish my name was Dookie Chase.
Dookie Chase? Hey. Change it.
Dookie Chase, nice to meet you. Well, I can't.
Well, last podcast we found out about Shane and the...
Murph and the Beltones.
Murph and the Beltones.
Yeah.
Could be Dookie Chase and...
No.
Dookie Chase and the...
Can't.
And the Grits.
Yeah.
So anyway, New Orleans. We should...
You want to go?
I want to go trip? Back to honor Dr. John.
Okay.
I'm sure the next Jazz Fest is going to feature tribute after tribute for Dr. John.
I'm down.
Okay. Done?
I'm down.
It's not all talk now.
Well, I drove with you to Newfoundland. Why wouldn't I drive with you,
You don't have to drive to New Orleans. Well, I flew to New Orleans.
You actually flew?
Yeah. Lloyd and I flew.
By then,
there will be direct flights.
Was there any Ativan involved?
No.
Nothing?
Alcohol.
Did
early
you get,
in the morning. Yeah, early in the morning alcohol.
Were you tipsy when you got on the plane? Or?
No. No.
What is it about the plane that you don't like?
Oh, I used to be much worse, Shane. I wouldn't go anywhere near a plane, but I've kind of conquered that.
That's good.
I grew up having nightmares of planes exploding in the sky and flying into buildings.
Okay.
Ugh. Seriously. So
okay.
That's a lot of baggage to grow up with. And then 9/11 happened.
And you're like, yeah, no, I'm driving.
No, that was it. I haven't had any nightmare since then. But I used to like wake up in a cold sweat because I was on a plane that was doing a nosedive.
Yeah.
But before it hit the ground, I'd wake up. It was terrifying.
Well, planes, if you think about them, are quite terrifying. Should we just take them for granted? It's been a couple of trips. I had to play in Cleveland, and I flew in. And my buddy said, do you want to come play at Kent State University? And she's like, well, you know, we can't pay you. But, you know, we'll fly in, whatever, and get some tickets because, you know, the budgets, I guess, for universities are different in the States. And we were on this DC-8, I don't know, the aircraft, and we hit some turbulence. And, you know, you could see it was me and the boys were gripping the...
Yeah, gripping white knuckle.
Oh, yeah. Saying, as my dad would say, saying the beads, you know? All of a sudden you get really religious.
Yeah, the famous scene from Almost Famous.
Yeah.
I'm gay!
Okay. Everything's good now. It was just a little turbulence. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've also based on the percentage of flights I've taken, I've had a few adventurous ones. But, no, I'm kind of over that. I'm still not totally comfortable, but I want to see the world.
So next year?
Yeah, I want to see the world. I want to travel. I want to see Europe. I'm not taking a boat. So no. I'm okay to fly now compared to when I was younger.
Never
I've seen
been
my
to Europe.
Kids grow up. You've never been to Europe?
No, you've never been to Europe.
No. You have?
Yes. 5 to 3 times? No. 4 times.
You went over to play?
Yeah, toured France 3 times, and then Germany and the Netherlands. And smoked some weed in Amsterdam, and I'll never do that again. Because I went up to the guy, I was like, because I'm not a weed guy per se. Like, you know, I'll have a puff of a joint, whatever, but it's too strong, first of all. Things changed in, like, the late 90s when there was regular weed, and then they figured some shit out. They're like, okay, let's give it a name. Let's crossbreed, whatever. And then I had a paranoia attack, and I'm like, okay, weed's not for me. So I was there with my girlfriend at the time. We go to the Amsterdam, the Bulldog. I'm like, okay, well, went in Rome. It's all the cafes. So I go up to the guy. I'm like, give me the weakest joint you have. And he gave me this cone. Looked like a mini baseball bat.
Yeah.
But it looked like it came like in a little plastic container with a cardboard back, you know, if you buy, you know.
Yes.
So, but you had to smoke it in the cafe, and the Bulldog Cafe was connected to the Bulldog Bar. So one side was the bar. You couldn't mix. I don't know why, but whatever. So a few hits on the joint, bang, bang, bang. We go over to the bar side, and I'm sitting there. And all of a sudden, I realize I'm really high. I'm just staring at the disco ball. And they were playing some weird Euro techno, like... And I was like... Oh. You know, you start breathing like...
Oh. And you can feel... Were you doing the Cowardly Lion there?
I held it in too long. I held it in too long. I want to come down. But, yeah, and that was, yeah, that was that. But it was great. We went to Rembrandt Museum and did all the things. And
yeah, I want to do that. I want to go to Prague. Everybody raves about Prague. I want to go to Italy and Spain and, England and Ireland and even Finland and
Sweden,
wherever, almost everywhere. I want to go to Greece.
Yeah.
So hopefully, what was that comedian who said, I got 30 summers left? I feel like I have 20 summers left.
Right.
So I want to get going on this.
Okay.
You know, nice segue from weed into Bob Dylan.
Okay. Bobby don't smoke no weed.
This is from December the 4th, 1975 at the Montreal Forum. I was there. This is part of not only the Scorsese documentary, Rolling Thunder Review, part fact, part fantasy, but also part of the 14 CD box set that comes with it. There were five performances that he filmed for a movie he was making called Ronaldo and Clara. And they took all of those five performances and put them on CD. And this is an example of what it sounded like when he reworked some of his classics, which he still does to this day. This is as old, almost as old as it gets, these next two songs, starting with this one, with a band that featured Dylan, Mick Ronson on lead guitar, from David Bowie fame and Mott the Hoople. Bobby Newirth on acoustic guitar and vocals. T-Bone Burnett on electric guitar, and nobody knew who T-Bone Burnett was back in the day there. Scarlett Rivera on violin, who just transformed that whole sound of that kind of gypsy punk rock and roll era of 75, 76 Bob Dylan. Here it is, and we'll talk right after it.
And it's a high. about to follow. Walk to the depths of the deepest, dark forest, where the people are many and their hands are all empty, where the pellets of poison are flooding their waters, where the home in the valley is cramped through the prison, where the executioner's face is always well hidden, where the hunger is early, where souls are forgotten, where black is the color, none is the number. And I'll tell it and think it and speak it and breathe it, reflect from the mountain so all souls can see it. And I'll stand on the ocean until I start sinking, but I'll know my soul well before I start singing. And it's a heart, and it's a heart.
Yeah, probably a version you would never have expected from back in his second album. The old folk legendary Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, very apocalyptic. And also Rob Stoner was the leader of the band, basically. He was on bass, a couple other people in there, Stephen Stolls. David Mansfield was on pedal steel, brilliant. At the time, he was 19.
Yeah,
it was like a wonder kid. Howie Wyeth on drums. And special guests, Roger McGuinn, Ramblin' Jack Elliott, Joni Mitchell, Joan Baez, Ronnie Blakely, who was in the movie Nashville at the time.
Ronnie Hawkins was a guest, or he just hung out on the tour?
Yeah, he was part of the movie.
Right.
He appeared, I think, in Toronto. He may have appeared in Toronto. Robbie Robertson appeared when they went to New York. And then there was the second leg in 76, which was a different vibe completely. It's my favorite Dylan era because, you know, Tangled Up in Blue Blood on the Tracks, 74, Desire, 75. He was playing these songs live off Desire, which is where Hurricane is,
right?
Before we got the album. And I have to admit, after seeing the concert live, the album, the studio versions, now that everybody can hear the live versions of all the songs from Desire practically, you can see how much better they are live. He was intense.
Yeah,
he had this white face on. He was, there was something driving him. And his marriage was splitting up, and they had just gotten back together, and they're filming a movie about him and Joan Baez and his wife Sarah Dillon, and they're shooting scenes. They hired Sam Shepard to write dialogue, which they didn't use.
Right.
It was just a shambles. The movie came out and it bombed. Nobody could understand it. It was 4 hours long.
For fans only.
But the footage was amazing, and they've been sitting on this footage for 40 years, and Scorsese...
did his thing.
He did. But there are people complaining that it's deceitful, it's dishonest, and it's fake news. Because there are some scenes, there are some interviews that are just made up. They're fictitious characters that are made up.
Right.
Which if you watch it on the surface, you're going, well, that makes sense. But it's they're actors playing people. Mm. But that's what Dylan does.
From Albuquerque, New Mexico. You make stuff up in interviews, right?
Yeah, you ran away to join the circus.
I was a butcher's son from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
But his
I just like watching you listen, listening to Dylan. It's like Christmas.
Well, I'm going back to when I was 16.
Rocking back and forth, a good old time, eh?
Well, that night was so vivid to me. That was, I had only
I
seen...
I thought you were going to play Isis.
You know what song about
is? You know what song is cool?
Read a May, read a May.
Yeah.
And I can't, there's no released version.
No, there's on the one of the bootleg versions, there's Rita Mae.
You got me twisting and a turning.
Yeah.
Something and a burning. I don't know he's talking about the burning, but, rock and roll is a vicious game.
So the first half comes to an end at this Rolling Thunder review, right? And the second half begins. You hear strumming, but the curtain is down on the stage. And all of a sudden you hear Dylan and Baez singing together. The curtain is still not up. So
blowing
it's very dramatic.
Blowing in the wind, right?
It's blowing in the wind. Yeah. And slowly, and it's almost like a flashback to 10 years earlier when they were traveling together and they were lovers. And it was quite an emotional moment in the Forum. And I had forgotten what they did at the chorus for the Forum crowd. So Here's Blowin' in the Wind from December 4th, 1975 at the Montreal Forum. Yeah, so 40-odd years later, I'd completely forgotten.
Were you there when that happened?
I was there, yeah, December 4, 75 at the Forum, yeah, that they sang the chorus in French for Blowin' in the Wind, but it's just a great...
You were 16?
December... Yeah, I was 16.
Who'd you go with?
I went with a friend named Phil Lazarus, who is a... he's a doctor. He's trying to cure cancer, and he's out... He just recently moved to Sacramento, I think, California. I haven't seen him in many years. I haven't seen him in 10 years. There was a 50th birthday party for him up in Tromelaw 10 years ago, so I haven't seen him, and he moved away. But we were sitting facing the stage in the cheap seats, you know, directly facing the stage and up. And I was on my feet all night. I had seen Dylan and the band in 74, early 74, like January 74, the comeback album.
You're 14.
Comeback tour. 15.
Okay.
Well, 14 going on 15.
Okay.
That was it. That was my first concert. Completely different because they, you know, the 66 tour, and they got booed everywhere they went because they plugged in, and now they came back, and it was like massive crowds everywhere. You couldn't get tickets except through mail order, and they were just washed in love. But it's like he sped through the songs. It's from Before the Flood is the double album that's out there from that tour.
Those were like the arena rock vibe, right?
Exactly. And he decided to go back to his roots and rearrange some of the songs and pay thanks to some of the people that he kind of zoomed past in the 60s,
right,
including and especially Joan Baez. And it was a great, that month-long tour in November, December 75 was outstanding, just outstanding. Massive show, 4 hours. Maybe that's why we do Billy Bob Productions. We do some long shows. It's in the spirit of that review. It was called the Rolling Thunder Review. And in the Scorsese documentary, Joan Baez is outstanding. I think Allen Ginsberg steals the show. I would urge any fan of music, any fan of the history of rock and roll to watch this. The performances are stunningly good. It was 30.
Ginsberg's a trip. He makes me uncomfortable when I watch him.
Well, there's. I don't want to give too much away if you haven't seen it, but
it's searching. I'm like, as he's talking, I'm like, what is there? What's the sub? What's the subtext? What's the you know, reading between the lines? What is the very charismatic fellow?
Yes, he is. And it's almost like the words are coming out and they're kind of floating in the air that come out of his mouth. And anyway, towards the tail end of this movie by Scorsese, I think Allen Ginsberg does a good job in explaining what this period was all about. And he challenges everybody in their own way to do the same thing artistically. So, Martin Scorsese, Netflix. I've seen it 4 times already. What was your first Forum concert?
First Forum concert.
Whoa. Or did you make it?
Not as cool as yours.
Hall & Oates?
No. Van Halen.
Van Halen.
1991. The Fuck Tour. They had an album called For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge. Get it? See what they did there?
Yeah.
And that was Eddie Van Halen playing. They had a single called Pound Cake, and he was playing with a drill. So you put like a pick on a drill.
Right.
And he's doing all this fast stuff, so the drill's like, and he... The drill is amplified, so he's like, and then they go into Ballad of a Thin Man,
which
is awesome. No, I'm just. What are you talking about? Yeah, they went from Pound Cake, and they did a killer version of Tom Thumb's Blues. It was amazing.
That sounds a little like Derek Sagan. I forgot to mention. Part of the 60th party was also some stand-up roasting.
Right. Yes.
Derek Sagan, Andy Bennett did a good job.
Very good. Very good.
Mitch Garber started everything off.
Love Andy. Yeah. Yep. Mitch Garber. There's your man right there.
Yeah. We're all fortunate in Montreal to have Mitch Garber.
Yes.
Here.
He's very very cool. So the Forum, yeah. And I wasn't a huge Van. I mean, I like Van Halen. I like David Lee Roth, Van Halen, you know, the first album, Van Halen 2, I forget when he left. And then Sammy Hagar came on and it just wasn't my
Do they still my cup of tour? Yeah. They do? With Sammy Hagar? Who was that other vocalist
was
they used
Sammy
for a while?
Hagar.
Before Sammy Hagar.
It was David Lee Roth and Sammy Hagar. Then it was Gary Cerrone, I think.
That's
from
who
Extreme.
I'm thinking of. Yeah.
I think his last name's... Tony, what's Gary's... Is it Gary Cerrone? Well, Tony has more knowledge of the harder rock stuff than I do. And then Hagar came back, and then they kicked out, which I understand, but it's kind of like Michael Anthony, the original bass player, got booted. Gary Cerrone, thank you, sir. Colgan on the decks, by the way. He booted out Michael Anthony to get his son Wolfgang to play bass. So it was like a family affair type of thing, but
yeah,
like
nepotism.
Yeah, it's I like the original right. lineups. I like David right. Lee Roth.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's my
fun front
that's
guy.
My that's
because you could see the David Lee Roth come out in you, anytime.
In who?
In you.
What are you talking about?
You could see the David Lee Roth influence in you.
Really, the spandex, the karate kicks,
jump.
The
you
scarves,
ever did jump?
The scarves. No.
Okay, so you have
I'm
to ask
much too
me.
Large
this came
of a
up,
man to do that.
This came up the other night. I don't know how it came up.
Why do I feel like you're going to ask me a ball-busting question
well,
or make
it is
a
ball-busting
busting
question
comment?
Because I feel we've been very kind of mellow so far, so
we've
got to pick it up here.
Okay.
As we head into the final third of episode 24 of the Melnick and Murphy podcast from Western NDG.
West Side.
CNS Studio. Thank
Want
you.
Want my
dude.
Chips with dip, yo.
Tony Colgan and Alan Hodgson, and brought to you by Lorne Rubin, Paramount Financial Services. He will take care of your money because he's very careful with it. He's very conservative, and he's very smart, and he knows how to handle people's money. That's why Paramount Financial Services has grown to what it's grown into. 514-905-0885, 514-905-0885. It just dawned on me the other night that I've never seen you perform a Beatles song.
No.
That's odd.
You're correct.
Why is that?
All right, next subject. What are we talking about now? We're going to talk about Howlin' Wolf?
I'm going to ask you why, according to TJ Plenty, of the Asexuals. You hate the Clash.
You are the worst. I don't hate the Clash.
You don't hate the Clash? I've never heard you do a Clash song.
I don't. Well, you haven't been to all my shows.
Have you performed a Clash song?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Yeah. Should I stay or should I go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, what I said was,
yes,
and I stand by this, I think the Clash were a great band, great songs. I think a lot of the records were made in haste. So if you listen to them, if you go back and everyone's like, oh, London Calling and
Combat Rock.
Combat Rock was later, but I mean the great London Calling is the album. It's like, I'm a huge Jimi Hendrix fan. But I don't think Are You Experienced is a good sounding record. They made the record in 3 days. Mm-hmm. And so when you listen to it for me, and there are people who, you know, could listen to this podcast and be like, you're full of shit, you know what I'm talking about. Go back and you listen to it. It sounds
you have to go back. You have to go back to not the most recent because they've remastered everything, right?
Right.
To mark the anniversary of the releases.
Sure. But even if you do listen to it, there's only so much that you could do. Once the signal goes to tape, it is what it is. And that album was made in 3 days. And the Clash records, to me, and Clash fans are very passionate. Like, I remember I said that to my old drummer, Mark Sharman. He's like, you're fucking full of shit. You know what the fuck you're talking about? The Clash is all. And I said, I didn't say the Clash was shit. I said, I don't like the sound of the records. It's like, well, Abbey Roads. People are like, Abbey Road is a great sounding record, or a great record. And I agree, it's a great record. I don't like the sound of the record. I listen to it, you know.
Okay, well, it's very nice.
You know me, and me. And it's like, and it, I find it piercing to my ears.
Okay, well, it's very subjective. And that's
right. On the Beatles, I was always more of a Stones guy.
Yeah, but so am I. But I love the Beatles. Frank Marino's favorite musician.
Well, are you
musician.
Asking me? Are you
Frank,
telling
well,
me?
Well, I'm just letting
it sounds
people
like
know.
You're telling me.
I'm just letting some people listening know that they may not be aware of that Frank Marino, guitar god, Jimi Hendrix, blah, 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 psychedelic 70s, all that, he absolutely reveres Paul McCartney.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's amazing. The Beatles were never blues-based.
Right.
As opposed to the Stones. So I got into blues when I was a kid, so I gravitated to the Stones. And the Beatles, I sang in a trio, and I never had, up until this point, with Marky and TLB, who are proactive, and when we started playing together, wanted to have a mic and wanted to sing harmony and wanted to bring this other element to the band, which I'm very fortunate to have now. But I'd be like, do you want to sing backup? And guys would be like, well, I don't really want to sing, man, and da-da-da. And a lot of the Beatles stuff, it's
harmony.
Yeah. It's John and Paul. It's those, you know, or John, Paul, and Joe, and George.
Well, all four of them.
John, Paul, and Joe.
Joe Harris,
the sixth Beatle.
No wonder. You've been looking for those Joe Harrison albums.
Joe Harris. So the nature of the music, I was playing in trios with a lot of different players, a lot of drummers, a lot of bass players. So the repertoire would have to be improvisational and blues-based, so I could get away with having guys come in, hey, how's it going? What's your name? Nice to meet you. These are the changes. Watch me for the stops and starts. Very a la Chuck Berry. So the Beatles, you can't do that. It's not, you can't be like, okay, we're going to play Dear Prudence. Watch me for the stops and the starts. It's.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
I understand. So,
you're getting me all agitated.
But what about
here.
What about
you started with
a,
the Beatles?
What about
and now
a signature?
Like I'm having anxiety
as a guitarist of some note, a signature song like "While My Guitar Gently Weeps," which is actually played by Clapton on the White Album. The lead.
Never on a Red Les Paul. Yeah, but again, that song. I mean, Jeff Healey did a version. There's a million versions, and I never felt it was like Stevie Ray Vaughan. You know, there's certain songs, you know, people say play Pride and Joy. I'm like, why? And bands do it, but I'm just like, or Voodoo Child or Red House, I have a soft spot for because, you know, that was one of the songs that really lifted me up and really inspired me. And I was like, wow. And it's one of those songs that is special to me, so I play it. But in terms of Little Wing, like, you can listen to Stevie play Little Wing. You can listen to Stevie play Voodoo Child. Listen to Jimmy play Voodoo Child. Mama Guitar Gently Weeps. Oh, my God. Am I having a stroke
there's
here?
There's no alcohol here today.
There's no alcohol. It never pulled me in.
Right.
I enjoyed the song, but it never pulled me in like, oh, I have to do the song live.
So you actually you'll listen to The Clash?
No.
I just explained,
didn't I just explain this whole thing to you? I'm having anxiety. Tony, is there any booze? Is there any whiskey in the back? I'm having an anxiety attack.
No, I'm not saying play it. This now I'm saying listen to it.
I get halfway through a song,
right,
and it sounds like the engineer has done a bunch of bad cocaine.
Okay, but there's a rawness to that. For me, I like the lack of production.
Is it raw? Is it raw? There's lack of production. The Willie Nelson song that we played off the top has very little production. That's microphones in front of really good musicians.
Right.
And there's no echo or reverb. There's not compressed. It's not any of this big hoop-de-dee-doo, whatever, studio trickery. It's just guys playing in a room, and they have the microphones on. Those guys are really good. And The Clash, were they great songwriters? Yes. Were they a cool band? Yes. Were they a great band? Yes. Were they fantastic musicians? Not really, but that wasn't the point.
But that doesn't
you know,
matter.
That's the spirit
that
of punk really, and all that
yeah,
stuff.
So let's listen
so
to.
So you're asking me for me.
All right, can you listen to like 2.5 minutes of a song by The Clash right now?
Yes.
From London Calling.
What am I going to say? No.
I don't know if this is. No, but I mean, really listen, not just like
Lauren's
take your headset
me.
Off and
gonna get
pace
fired from
and
the
smoke
boxes.
A cigarette. Okay. I mean, like, really listen. This is from London Calling. And here we go. Yeah, there's one of my favorite, maybe my favorite song. It depends on my mood, obviously, but one of my all-time favorites off London Calling, which is not an obvious choice from that album.
Yeah, and?
It was quick,
played
fast,
with
rock
played
and roll.
With intention and feeling and vibe and emotion.
Yeah.
However, for me, the production is just, it bugs me.
What bugs you about that?
Do you want me to get into the ins and outs of what,
well, yeah,
as
a
musician?
Well, yeah, a lot of people who listen are musicians.
The frequency, the choice of frequencies in the EQ. Now, when you record stuff, you have a choice. to amplify certain frequencies and to cut certain frequencies. And that comes down to ultimately the producer and the engineer, because the artists are usually focused on performing and giving it their all in the studio, and they probably cut that together in the old school tradition. And maybe, I don't know who the engineer was, and I don't want to hurt any feelings, but it's just not my cup of tea. I feel like Jesus on the cross here. What's wrong with the Clash? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, when you listen to Daniel Lanois produce, what is, Love and Theft?
Yeah.
Time Out of Mind?
No, no. Yes, Time Out of Mind.
Love and Mercy?
No.
What? You got me all rattled.
John Cusack.
You got me agitated.
John Cusack
here.
Doing Brian Wilson. No, it's Oh Mercy.
John Cusack?
Yeah, John Cusack played one of two Brian Wilsons in the movie. It was a pretty good movie, actually. No, Daniel Lanois produced Oh Mercy in 1989
right.
by Dylan, recorded in New Orleans.
And then
he did Time Out of Mind in 97.
Right. So very pleasing to the ear.
Yeah. I think there's a certain signature Lanois sound, swampy kind
fine,
of, right?
Fine, but that's apart from his that's an aesthetic, his choice of reverbs and all that stuff. But the actual recording itself, you listen to his recordings, and I'm not a Lanois freak, but they're great records.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lucinda Williams, Essence, it's a great sounding record. I think better sounding than Car Wheels on a Gravel Road. Most people think, as a piece of art, that Car Wheels on a Gravel Road is a stronger album.
Yeah, the songs.
But for me, the production is better. So that's all I'm saying. I love Jimi Hendrix.
So yeah, but you don't like the way his albums were produced.
I like my favorite one is Axis, because it took more time. It's a shorter album. For me, Electric Ladyland is like 18 songs, and obviously the boys were partying a little bit and exploring and all that stuff.
Well, that's it's quite a statement to welcome an artist into the world with. Right?
What?
Here I am.
What, are you experienced?
Yeah.
100%. He's my guy. I love him.
I know. By the way, killer version of Red House at the party with Selena Wolf.
Yeah. Oof. She's a darling. She's amazing.
So
she's got that thing.
Oh, yeah. For sure. So if we were to do a 40th anniversary tribute to London Calling.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah. You'd be out.
No, I didn't. No. Okay. Well.
Well, just that reaction. Oh, Christ. That doesn't sound like you're enthusiastic.
No. I'm enthusiastic about it.
Yes.
Because I like the energy. My first band I played in, apart from Murph and the Belltones, when I was like an actual member, was a punk band. And I'm going to find you some of the, I'm going to get, for the next podcast, I'm going to bring in stuff. And the drummer's like, that fast. I played in a punk band.
Like Reverend Horton Heat?
No, that's like more like psychobilly.
Cowpunk.
That's psychobilly. Cowpunk would be more like the Dills or...
the Dills. Mac McKenzie's boys.
Yeah. Yeah, those guys. That's
okay, so we are planning this as we speak for December.
Mm-hmm.
To commemorate the 40th anniversary.
Should they give you know what you should have done on your birthday? We should have given you the bumps. Should have given you the bumps.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the London. Okay,
file that for future reference.
The 40th anniversary of London Calling.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What's your question?
And some other
yes
groups that were active and thriving in that area. Albums from 79, the whole new wave, post-punk new wave movement. 5-year window, 79 through 84.
Uh-huh.
Mostly British, but some American and Canadian too, and local. Mm-hmm. Would that interest you? Do you think people would be into
it? I would love to get up and play a couple of songs.
Okay.
I did that stuff with my cousin, Emmett. Replacements.
Yeah.
When I was 20 years old, he turned me on. He said, Paul Westerberg, remember that name. It's very important. I said, okay.
Great
Lou
songwriter.
Reed. Yeah. All that stuff.
Although, but Lou Reed had already.
I know, but that sort of. You know, I'm not some blues rock elitist. Are. No, I'm not.
No, you can't be a blues rock elitist if you won't play Stevie Ray Vaughan. Which, by the way, I don't mind that you don't play him. Honestly,
I love Stevie Ray Vaughan.
I know you do, and you know what I've said about you and having that same feeling.
I feel like I'm Ed McMahon when play. With Johnny Carson that time he got drunk and he was trying to pretend not to be drunk and he was like, and I went to see the chimpanzees and Johnny's like, it's okay, it's okay. Well, you're making me very upset. You're making me very upset. Anyways.
So that is probably the next major Billy Bob Productions night.
Can't wait.
In December.
It's going to be awesome. It will be awesome. It's going to be awesome.
It is.
Yeah. My favorite eras of music. Patti Smith. The Cars. Who else? Graham Parker.
Graham Parker and the Rumor. Elvis Costello. Damn the Torpedoes. Television. The whole... Did you see the movie CBGB's?
No.
With Alan Rickman playing...
he's the best. I love him.
I think you'd enjoy it.
Okay.
Sometimes I cringe when I'm about to watch some of these music
right.
docu-dramas.
Yeah.
But that one worked. I enjoyed it.
Who does he play?
He plays Hilly... The guy who owns it.
Okay.
Yeah. CBGB's.
Okay. Was David Johansen in television?
He was in the New York Dolls. Yeah. And he still plays as Buster Poindexter, the dude from the late 70s, used to be on Saturday Night Live, more of a lounge act. I saw that at City Winery in New York two summers ago.
Hot.
Yeah. He's great. He's a personality. He's a performer.
He looks like someone who should be famous.
Well, he's got that mixture of Jagger and Tyler kind of face about him, right?
Yeah. Very iconic face.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite punk new wave artist?
Well, the replacements aren't really new wave punk. I would say...
Well, they're in there.
I would say, yeah, but they're like 84, was the first
album. 79 to 84. That's why we have to spread it out to 84 to get the replacements.
I love the Cars.
In.
When was the Cars' first album?
Cars were 82, 83, I think.
Love the Cars. I love... I do love the Clash.
No, you don't.
I do. I remember one of my first rock and roll moments. My dear friend who I went to high school with, Paul Henbury, he just visited me. And he came to Honey Martin's and he sat in. I remember he was playing a Les Paul, which he still has. And it was a real one. And I had a fake one. And he was playing at the carnival at Loyola High School. And I had just transferred from Verdun Catholic to Loyola. And... they got up on stage, and he sang, and he played Should I Stay or Should I Go? And I was, like, lit up by rock and roll. Well, so I do love The Clash,
okay.
I would say, from that era.
There's a lot of reggae into their sound,
yeah.
The Clash,
mm-hmm.
which I know you're a big fan.
Yeah, huge reggae head. But, yeah, it's just the sound of the records. I guess The Clash would be my favorite. I like The Ramones. I love The Ramones. I feel like they have this really cool 50s doo-wop vibe that people don't get.
Yeah.
Like they could be 50s
from Queens.
50s songs, you know, like Brill Building 50s songs.
People forget that Phil Spector actually produced one of their albums.
Which one?
Phil Spector produced The Ramones.
Which one?
Yeah, you'll have to go back and check it.
I would have liked to put a fly on the wall for that one.
Yeah, no kidding. Or a gun on the wall. So I want to get this in. Is there anything you'd like to? Is there anything that's upcoming that you're like the festival season is coming up around the corner?
Yeah, I'm in Tromblon Blues Fest, July 6th, 7th, and 8th.
That's too bad. You're going to miss Garland Jeffries and Steve.
I know.
Little Steve Van Zandt.
I know. He's
little
playing Steve, the 6th,
Disciples
the 8th?
Of Soul. They're playing July the 8th at the Olympia
Monday.
Theater. Yeah.
So Tromblon is going to be fun. I have. A festival in the Eastern Township called L'Esprit de Poton in Poton. I don't know where that is yet. It's a little town. They contacted me, and I was like, absolutely, I'd love to do it. It's near Mansonville.
Oh, yeah.
And
that place. Yeah, that's that. They're famous for holding Clash festivals.
Clash festival. Oh, my God, I'm getting a migraine. And Newfoundland.
The Brunt Festival.
Yes. Mr. Stephen Brunt and company.
Maybe I'll join you for that again. I haven't been there.
You can fly.
Yeah.
You can fly.
I could fly.
No more 29-hour.
What song starts with that lyric? I can fly or you can fly?
That's a million songs.
Okay.
I believe I can fly.
I want to thank some people that I'm sure you would join me in thanking for helping out for the 60th birthday bash.
Absolutely.
At the Fairmont Theater. McCauslin Brewers. All right. McCauslin Breweries. JC and Phil for supplying all the beer.
Very cool.
And who else have we got here? Morella's and Magic Palace. Dennis and Colin.
Delicious food.
Have you seen the Knuckles commercial for Magic Palace yet?
No.
Oh, yeah. It's great. Maison Mash Catering. All the meatballs and sandwiches and spring rolls. Man, I'm getting hungry reading this, and I didn't have any of it. Picaro's and Vago. Vago, of course, the one of the great Italian restaurants in North America on Green Avenue and around the corner on St. Catherine and several other places. Tomasino and Angela. Picaro's and Vago's. Cook and Eat. Jack Maggioni, who's also from Cook and Date and is responsible for Mike's Rub Pizza. Was courtesy of Jack.
Did you have dinner?
I had dinner at La Banquise.
You didn't eat?
I did not eat.
Oh, my God. Okay.
That's why I don't remember anything. Cunningham's Pub. Is it Jim Beauchamp or Beauchamp?
Jimmy Beauchamp.
Jimmy Beauchamp, who's like world famous.
Yes.
As I discovered.
He's a Montreal icon.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Do you know who you were just talking to? That's Jimmy from Cunningham's Pub. He said, how come you never come out there? I said, because you're in St. Anne's in Hudson.
Yeah. One day we'll take a jaunt out there, get a Motel 6 or something, and we'll get loose in Hudson.
But thank you, Shane. I know how much work was involved in this party. And again, those of you who are fans of the podcast, thank you very much. We'll have some special guests coming up over the next several ones, some very special guests, including Frank Marino. Jim Zeller's going to stop by. He's got a new album. Talk about telling some stories.
Yeah, man.
Howard Billerman will be nailed down. And
Haig Vartsbedian.
A guy I used to work with briefly.
Yes.
CIQC Radio.
Was the producer of a Montreal landmark album, Branvan 3000's Glee. And the state of hip-hop back then and the state of hip-hop right now. He's doing lots of cool shit.
Thank you to Lorne Rubin. Is there one brief story you can tell through these 4 months that you guys were planning this that you want to share?
It was just we'd have these. He'd say, well, what about this? And what about, because we'd meet at Café Orange. And
great spot.
Yeah, very cool.
Ontario.
He'd be like, well, what if this happens and that? I'd be like, it's okay. And that was because I'd been through The Last Waltz and the Southern Soul Review with you, with your timesheet that was like, I can't really go into it, try to explain what that is, but you have a run sheet for an event. I was like, you're doing fine. He's like, well, what if this happens? I'm like, well, if this happens, we do this. And I think he got a bit of the bug.
Yes, he did.
I was like, well, he's like, well, can we do this? I'm like, Lauren, you're the executive producer. You're the boss. I'm like, do you want that to happen? He's like, yes. I'm like, okay, well, let's do it. So it was fun to watch somebody do an event like that, and I'm sure he's planned events in other.
Yeah, he used to. You played his charity golf tournament,
right? But I'm saying in terms of running a night, yeah. You're producing a night, producing a show. It was.
Yeah, he wants to do this.
It's fun. I mean, the whole. That's why we do it, right?
It's a rush. It is a lot of fun, and you want everybody to enjoy themselves,
right? You want people to get off, right? You want people to have a good time, get jazzed. They're like, I just saw this great night.
You know, what we do at Billy Bob Productions is to showcase how good you guys are, or a lot of our local musicians, and give them an audience that they normally don't have one of that size.
Yeah.
And that's basically what we do.
But it's, you know, it's the backstage, and you get the beer backstage, and you get the catering, and it's just, I fell in love with it from a young age, so it was fun to see him sort of get that.
So you can thank Lauren as well if you give him a call. If you're having issues with your money, you don't hear from the people who take care of your money, you don't like what some of your money is disappearing, you just don't have a good feeling, and you want somebody who you know really cares about what he does. That's what Lauren does. Paramount Financial Services, 514-905-0885. Thanks again to Tony Colgan, Alan Hodgson, CNS Studios, Western NDG.
West Side.
We're going back to December the 4th, 1975, Montreal Forum with a rat-a-tat-tat finish from Bob Dylan and the Rolling Thunder Review. Until next time.
July. But I don't sense affection, no gratitude or love. Your loyalty is not to me, but to the stars above. One more cup of coffee for the road. One more cup of coffee before I go to the valley below. Teach you how to pick and choose and how to throw the blade. He oversees his kingdom, so no stranger does it intrude. His voice it trembles as he goes out for another plate of food. One more cup of coffee before I go. One more. And your pleasure knows no limits. Your voice is like a meadowlark, but your heart is like an ocean, mysterious and dark. One more cup of coffee for the road. One more cup of coffee before I go.
I believe.